Good morning and welcome to our meeting planning in on August 20th, 2024. The time to convene a regular meeting is Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me are Tony Olson, our Vice President, Rebecca Wolf, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO, Alan Lonebrock, our General Counsel, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or electronic devices at this time. This session is for the Board and CEO and General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. Start out with item one, our CEO General Manager briefing the study session. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. We've got lots of good stuff on the agenda today, so we'll get right at it. First up in your packet was the legislative update. We've got the legislative team here to answer any questions.
Questions, Commissioners?
I have no questions about that. Interesting articles attached. Very.
They all provide great stuff.
Yes.
I don't have any questions. Okay. I just was some interesting reading.
I don't either. But you have something you want to tell us? Good morning.
Just really quickly, in the state section of the report, we talk about the Washington. Kim Johnston, Director of Government Relations Strategy here at the district. In the state section of our report, we've got the Washington Families Clean Energy Credits Program mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I did want to invite Jeff up just to give a brief update on how we're utilizing those dollars to date here for our customers. So.
Thank you. Good morning. Jeff Feinberg, Senior Manager of Energy Services. And so I did want to give a brief update. So you guys will recall in May, earlier of this year, that the state legislature set aside $140 million for the Climate Commitment Act to go towards clean energy bill credits for customers. We here at PUD, we received $14.4 million of that, so roughly about 10% of those dollars were allocated to our customer base. And there was a formula that the state used based on poverty rates and population and all those things to kind of disperse those $140 million. And so we wanted to share a little bit about kind of our current state of where we're at with implementation and what's going to happen next. And so the fun part about any of these big programs that the state rolls out is no matter how long it takes us to get through contracting and rules and all the policy steps, the deadline remains the same. And so for this particular program, September 15th of this year is when we have to have all $14.4 million out the door. And so our team's kind of been working around the clock. And when I say our team, it's a real big team of about 40 different people across 8 different departments. And I'm not going to name names this morning quite yet, but when we come back in mid to late September and we kind of celebrate that all the credits got out the door, I do want to like slowly and meticulously name everyone who's had a hand on this program, because it's a lot of work that goes into us kind of huddling up and getting this thing taken care of. And so all that to say, the rules of the program, we can serve customers up to 150% of area median income. However, we're supposed to give priority to customers at the 0 to 80% of area median income. And so there's several ways we can perform eligibility for customers. However, there is a process involved in that. And so our team's kind of been working with external partners that Commerce has provided, Promise to do customer matching programs with some other state programs that customers are eligible for, plus our own internal and ratepayer-funded programs, and also a self-attestation process that customers are allowed to kind of go through and talk about their income as well. And so we've leveraged all these different processes to get customers eligible. And so the $14.4 million that we received, I'm happy to report that on August 9th, we ran our first batch of bill credits, and we were able to serve 28,100 households to the tune of $5.62 million applied to customer accounts. You guys might have recognized in the District Daily yesterday that we started sharing some of those customer testimonials. And as sure as we, you know, as soon as we passed those over, we received another probably 5 or 6 customer testimonials yesterday from customer service. But these $200 bill credits really are making a difference for a lot of our customers. And so we're going to kind of continue to capture those moments when customers kind of have their attitude. I'm also happy to report that batch 2, we have teams feverishly working on that. And we expect that this batch is going to be roughly 37,000 households that we'll serve in this round of funding. We're hoping to apply those credits either later today or early tomorrow for another $7.5 million. And so that will get us to about 65,000 households total, hopefully by the end of this week. And then that will leave us about $1 million between now and the program deadline of September 15th. And so we're on track, we're reaching out. The one other comment that I want to make is, of that 14.4, we're allowed as a utility to take 700,000 of that to recover administrative costs. But one of the things I really want to brag on our team about is our team has been really committed all along to only using what of those administrative funds we need to run this program, because anything we don't use administratively, we can roll into additional bill credits for customers. And I'm happy to report that our team's been really creative and really innovative with what we've built, so that we're able to, you know, repurpose some other processes that we have for things like rebates that we do in energy services and things like that, so that we're using very little of those administrative dollars. So again, we're going to be able to serve even more households with these bill credits. And so we project that by the September 15th deadline, not only will we hit our number, but that we will be serving roughly about 70 to 71,000 households because of being conservative with the way we're using our admin. So I also just want to name off all the departments that have been a part of this process, because it's many people. CorpCom has been intimately involved both with helping us build our self-attestation form, communicating with customers, and then also sending the follow-up letters so customers understand why they've received these credits. Obviously, customer service has done a lot of triage, because anytime you run an automation of touching 28,000 customer accounts, you're going to naturally notice things, and we're going to get phone calls, and we're going to have to kind of track things down and solve problems, and so they've been really a critical part of that. As you might expect, customer accounting running these automations. We've got general accounting, treasury, and finance that have worked tirelessly reading the grant rules and making sure that we're on track with receiving our funds in and out the door. Our IT department working sometimes late to help us run these automations and then troubleshoot whenever we have the problems. Energy services, our legal teams reviewing contract and government affairs. And I think the last thing I want to say, and it's what makes projects like this really fun, is this is technically no one's day job here at the utility, right? Like, this is kind of a duties under, other duties assigned for a lot of us. But what's so cool is when we have these programs and these opportunities to do something right on behalf of our customers with these hard deadlines, it's pretty cool because we can kind of contact any department and people just rally and say, let's figure this out and let's figure out how to get it done. And they prioritize this, they move it to the front of the line in addition to the work that they're already doing. And so it's just a lot of fun to get to work on this kind of stuff and to see the impacts. And like I said, we'll be back to fully spike the football, to use one of John's terms, in late September when we kind of celebrate our final numbers and details. And I really do want to list off names because so many people have worked really hard on this, but yeah, just really proud of the results so far and excited about where we're going.
Questions for Jeff?
Wonderful. This is super, super wonderful. Thank you.
You know, administrative costs associated with grants or whatever are one of my hotspots. So to hear, you know, it's like music to my ears in terms of the commitment of the staff, but also the commitment to using it only as you need to. And I have a question. If there are some entities that don't use up all their money by the deadline, is there any chance that some of that could get redistributed?
That's a great question, and thank you for asking it. We did fill out a survey last week.
Stupid question.
No, the state actually sent out a survey last week, and I wouldn't believe that our government affairs team was kind of instrumental in working with the state to even get this question asked. But they said, if we can get more funds, can we utilize that? And the answer is 100% yes. And from what I understand, there are utilities that may not be participating in the program, and so those funds would be redispersed to those of us that are getting out the door, getting the funds out the door. And I'll just say, like, just so you know, kind of our posture on this sort of thing, anytime we receive these kinds of funds with deadlines, our goal is to always wrap it up before the deadline for that very reason, so that we can look right back at the state and we can say, hey, if there's additional funds available, we've got folks that we've already deemed eligible that we've not yet been able to serve, and we're happy to take those funds and figure out that problem towards the deadline. So it sounds like there'll be an opportunity. I think it might be to magnitude of tens of thousands of dollars versus millions. However, we'll be at the ready to serve additional households if funds become available.
Wow, thank you. What an impressive amount of work for 40 some people. Like you say, that's not our regular job. So
yeah, we have the best people here.
Yes. And you know, $200 is quite a bit.
It is.
On a credit.
Yeah.
So we feel so
much. I enjoyed the stories in the daily operating.
Yeah, it helps us all wake up and hustle a little harder. And I'll just say, I can't wait to come back and tell you what we're going to do with the $5.3 million of HERS rebates, but that's a little bit later this fall. So we should have seen enough.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. And you know, I won't pass up an opportunity to brag on our team as well. Jeff, again, and leading the effort, everybody that's involved. And to Commissioner Bolton's question, some of the rumors that I have heard are our competitors, actually our peers, Martin, don't have quite the processes and folks that get things done, and they're not going to be able to utilize all this money. So again, that can be money that we make.
And this is public power?
Yeah.
How unfortunate.
I know there's
We're just that good.
No, I'm talking about those that
I know.
That don't want to pick up the torch and do it.
I know there's at least a couple of beauties that I read that you know, you have to tell your customers that come from the Climate Commitment Act. So some are concerned about telling their customers that's where the money came from.
I hope it's not any of those. I saw the percentage based upon the geographic area. And some of those, I hope utilities aren't in any of those areas where there were a lot of eligible customers.
Yep.
I don't expect any feedback, but I sure hope that they do taking advantage of it.
Yeah, agreed. Because that is most important, is impacting the customers. Excellent. Also, our next up is our strategic plan quarterly update, and Laura Lemke. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm Laura Lemke, senior program manager in the government relations and strategy team, and I oversee the management and implementation of the strategic plan here for the district. And I am thrilled to be back for a twice annual update in person to you about progress. Let's see if I can make the clicker work today. Also, I'm checking my notes. And I guess I always feel compelled to say that probably the least important cog in the wheel of people that are making all of this happen, there are 40 initiative leads working with teams across the district to make all of this happen. I'm just here representing them today with this update. We don't need to talk about this slide. Our purpose today is just an update on the implementation and execution. There's no action requested of you at this point, but if you do have questions as I go, I'd be thrilled to answer them. Briefly, for the benefit of anyone who's listening in now or listening to the recording later, the way our strategic plan is structured is that we have at the top our purpose, which is to deliver essential utility services to help our communities thrive. Our values are how we behave, which is that every day we safeguard what matters, putting employee and community safety first. Safety really is our most important value. We have integrity, we are a team, we serve with pride and rise to challenges, and while we do that, we choose to include all, seek growth, and be bold. The commitment that we made to our community, if you remember, is to be a powerful partner, provide exceptional value, deliver excellent experiences, and be the best version of Team PUD. Underneath that, we have our vision, we have 5 strategic priorities, and then each priority is supported by a series of objectives and strategic initiatives. Today, I'm mostly going to focus at the objective level as we go through. Key performance metrics. I love all the nerdy stuff at heart, so we're going to start with the nerdy stuff. I want to note that this is the public, you know, this is the top level version of the metrics for the strategic plan. Each one of the objectives also has a series of key performance indicators and metrics associated to it that we review as part of the executive quarterly review process. And then starting this last quarter, the quarter that we're reporting on now, we're doing a quarterly review with all of the strategic initiative leads and the ELT together, turning that into a larger conversation for the quarterly review. I'm actually going, because I repeat this slide at the end, I think we'll go through the detail underneath these, and then we can come back to the top level at the end, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
So first up is safeguard what matters. There are three KPIs underneath this one. Recordable incident rate, looking at the last 12 months. I always want to note that that is not the same as our OSHA recordable incident rate. It's calculated the exact same way, but OSHA is a calendar year. And this is a rolling 12 months, so we can see it, how it's changing over time. The number looks up for the last 12 months versus the prior 12 months. However, as you'll see in the July operating dashboard that you're going to get in next meeting's packet, year to date, we've got 20 injuries versus 29 in 2023. And so that number is really being driven up by the second half of 2023 and how it compared to the second half of 2022. We're doing quite well year to date for this year. Severity rating is the number of lost days divided by the number of recordable injuries, and it is, you know, it looks up, but again, that, or it is up, but again, that's sort of a comparison being driven by the end of 2023, and it's a little dependent on what the injuries are and how many lost days people have associated with that. And then preventable vehicle accidents, last 12 months is 32 versus 34. Year to date, as of the end of July, we're actually even year over year. Questions on the safety KPIs at all? System reliability. We look at this in a couple of different ways from the strategic plan perspective, in addition to the ways that we look at it from an operations perspective. So the top left corner is our SAIDI number, sitting up over last year and up against the target and up against the prior 12 months. It's also up against our five-year average. But we have not had any major event days year to date. And so all of the smaller storms that we've had are in that number. And because we're sitting mid-year this year, you know, there's an impact to having those storms in there.
Laura, I had a question about safety. Mm-hmm. So you know, we just had a presentation recently, and I should have asked this question then, but I was didn't really think about it in this context until we, you know, we looked at this dashboard today. And you know, unfortunately, there's so much Mother Nature involved in SAIDI. Have we thought about building something that can show the employees who are working on reliability that we are improving? I assume we're improving, right? That we're putting infrastructure in to make improvements. Is there another way to look at that? I mean, I know we need to look at it this way because it's the industry standard, but is there a way to look at it in-house that gets us?
There it is. Wow.
Is there any?
There are a number of efforts underway right now to look at different ways of tracking reliability metrics and seeing the impacts of the asset management programs, vegetation management, et cetera, et cetera. We're not in a place right now where we can start putting that number forward. There's some data work to be done underneath in terms of how we track and report metrics. But the initiative leads that are working on objective 1.2, which is about build the grid of our future and has most of our reliability initiatives in it, they're having an ongoing conversation about what those metrics should and could be to measure the impacts of the good work that those teams are doing. So I don't have a metric for you, but we are working towards having one.
I thought of one, but it's just me that, you know, maybe pick a threshold for wind, say 20 miles an hour. Any day where it was over 20 miles an hour didn't get included in safety. You know, something we still need to capture that we have wind, we have storms, things go down. But I'm just thinking of the team working on proven reliability, and the number goes the wrong direction because of a.
Of the impacts of something.
Yeah, of a storm that's not horrific, but still a storm that pumps this number up. So it's just a thought.
Yeah, it's actually a great question, and we've had conversations regarding this over the past few years, and probably even more so over the last couple months, actually as David and the team had prepared to present, we had continued that conversation. At my previous utilities, we did measure what was called blue sky outages. There were two sets of data, both for SAIDI, SAIDI, and CAIDI. Blue sky outages, which were non-storm days, and then storm, not including major event days.
Yeah.
And that two sets of data, and actually there was probably more focus on improving certain aspects of your system towards the blue sky days, because those are the things, underground cable faults, some switching scenarios, things like that. You can actually measure the the improvement much more succinctly.
Right.
Because once a weather event, no matter what the wind is, and certain times of the year, the amount of rainfall, the type of rainfall, all those things can go into impacting reliability for that given day or that given time. So it is something, but the team also pointed out that the time to properly make this transition or start to measure that is as we implement the new ADMS system. It'll give us better data, better technology to actually set that up from the beginning and start to manage that. So coming soon. And I would,
there's work left to do.
There's work left to do.
And it is absolutely the right question. And I would also, John, he knows this stuff much better than I. So if John wants to add on to any of that, please.
Is there anything you want to add?
Just one thing.
Excellent.
I heard four this morning, so.
Good morning. John Heap, Principal Engineer and Distribution Automation Project Manager. And the one thing I wanted to point out is something that's not on the screen is
the microphone a little bit closer.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
One thing that's not on the screen is the KD metric, which is really focused on when you do have an outage, how long does it take to get that your power back on? And one thing that I want to point out is even though our numbers are high, we're having a lot of these mini storms, the amount of time that it takes our operations to identify the problem, get a crew on site, make repairs, and get customers back in power has not increased. So we're seeing more work, but we're responding to it at the same speed or even faster.
And with technology, that'll get even better. Right? Oh, yes, tell me yes.
We'll probably be talking about that a lot later on in this agenda.
Why isn't Katie on here? I think you told us, but I forgot. You're biting your lip. I retract my question.
Go ahead. Well,
I'll give an answer, which is mainly from a space constraint standpoint. But if we want to add KD to this, we can and will.
We can get it. We get it elsewhere in others.
I will make sure. I will go back and double check that it, if it's not, since it's not here, that it is in the monthly operations report.
Yeah.
And if it's not, we'll add it in there.
Okay.
And because John had said that to me earlier this morning, we are down about if we did have last 12 months compared to the prior 12 months comparison for Katie on here, it would be down about 20 minutes. So.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point that John makes. That's the one metric that we can measure that there's still a little bearing on between blue sky and storms, but it's a great metric for us to track that actually shows the restoration times, pure restoration times by outage, not just as an average. It's a great point.
And a better answer to your question about why it's not here is we were looking at the SAIDI and the SAIFI in terms of those being the sorts of things that people think about. How many times did my power go out? How much time has my power been out? And then combining that with the average system availability index and the customers experiencing multiple interruptions gives us kind of the more customer experience side of it. So we landed on those four metrics, but it is an evolving game plan about what metrics we're using for this as we get into the strategic plan. So we could reevaluate bringing Katie in here.
But no, because I think it's in another report that we get.
Water reliability is running about even with last year. It's up just a little bit, but you know, we've gone from 0.71 to 0.79, so it's not a huge change. Are there any other questions on system reliability?
No, I guess you can't. Blue sky days would include like squirrel damage.
Yep. Oh, like what happened in Edmonton?
Yes.
The next page is financial stability. We track three metrics here: our current ratio, our debt service coverage ratio, and our operating ratio. I'm going to talk just for a couple of seconds on the operating ratio number. I want to note that on the electric side, that over budget comparison is really being driven by power costs in the first month of the year. And so as we move through the year, it's been coming down closer to budget, just as we naturally are staying on budget for the remainder of the year. And on the water side, that positive, the delta between 83 and 87 is mostly that revenues have been up and expenses were down through June. And so that number, because we budget revenue as a flat number for water, you'll see that number come closer to the budget number as we move through the year. Customer experience, there is a major change on this, which is invisible to you unless you were paying a lot of attention to the numbers, which is that in the past, up until this report, we've been tracking ourselves against the West mid-size average, which is 16 utilities. We have transitioned at John Hoffman's insistence and urging. She decided not to compare ourselves to the local league, but to compare ourselves to the national league. So we are comparing ourselves to mid-size utilities across the country. There are 62 of them. And so the change you might have noticed is not to our score, but when we reported, I think last quarter, our rank was fifth. Now our rank is 16th. But that's mostly just because we expanded the pool of utilities that we're comparing ourselves against. So our quarterly score update here is that our overall satisfaction index number is 726, and we are ranked 16th out of 62. That's a year-to-date score. It is actually up from the Q1 number, but down a little bit from the end of last year. Our net promoter score has come up to 8, and our involvement in the community score is up, what looks like a rounding error, but I think works out to 2 or 3%. And you can see our rank has improved for both our net promoter score and our and the involvement in the community.
So the historical number that was changed to the new group?
So our score doesn't change, just our ranking comparison.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so our score was always 726, but if we're comparing ourselves to a group of 16, we were fourth. When we compare ourselves to a group of 62, we're 16. He has promised that when we're number one in the West mid-size, we will still celebrate, and then we'll celebrate again when we're number one in the national mid-size, and then probably we'll change ourselves to all utilities and we'll drop back down again.
Could you go back to net promoter score for a second? Could you explain it a little?
Yeah, basically the way JD Power calculates net promoter score is they take everybody's responses, and I can't remember exactly what the question is, but it's basically, would you recommend this utility to your friends and family? Oh. And everybody who responds positively goes on one side of the equation, and everybody who responds negatively goes on the other side. And they subtract the negative number from the positive number. And so since we're above zero, we have a positive net promoter score. If we were below zero, we would have more detractors than we have supporters.
In passive segments is like, I'm not sure.
This is where I'm a little bit out of my expertise, but I'm assuming that they use a score of somewhere like on a scale of 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are in the middle, they get considered neutral. And so they don't count those.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And if you want more detail on that, I can get you a more exact answer.
Well, I just hadn't thought about it.
Thank you. You're welcome. Our last section, I think, is employee experience. We are rolling, as you've probably seen in District Daily and other places, we are rolling out an employee experience survey. So we'll have more direct feedback from district employees, theoretically, either by the time we do a Q3 report or a Q4 report. But at the moment, we're tracking voluntary employee turnover, which is down the last 12 months compared to the prior 12 months and significantly down from 2 years ago. And then our overall employee turnover, and we do now have the 2023 benchmark from Milliman. And as you can see, we compare favorably to our other Northwest utilities, as well as the public sector in Puget Sound in general. So in a nutshell, this is all of the metrics we just reviewed. Any final questions on those?
Questions?
Thank you.
No. I have one more thing I want to touch on, and then I'll ask you if you have any other questions about the report. So because I only stand up here and talk to you twice a year, I thought I'd grab the highlights from Q1 and Q2 for you and pull them up and out of the detail of the individual priorities. There's three of our priorities that really have significant achievements year to date. Under bolster operational reliability and resiliency, you've seen the presentations and the conversation about the continued progress on the battery energy storage system. Peter has stood up a load forecasting, a load forecasting steering team has been stood up, and I don't remember who's on point for it. The Enterprise Risk Management Program has been launched. There's a contract in place and a program manager on board, and that is moving forward. The rates team did complete the 2024 cost of service analysis and rates, and they've been doing workshops with the ELT on that. Under evolve and enhance customer experiences, the ConnectUp solution upgrade was completed, including updates to the head end management system and the other system we updated. It was all upgraded completely with no outstanding major defects at this moment in time. So the upgrade was successful and pieces could move forward. We've also launched the online discount application platform. You had an update from Missy Wilch earlier this year. And as Jeff just talked about, the self-attestation form for the $14 million in energy credits is gangbusters at the moment. And then finally, we launched the iEnergy platform for customer energy efficiency programs so that that application and process moves online. Underneath the create the culture and capabilities needed for the future, we implemented the new non-represented job descriptions. We completed the 2024 to 28 collective bargaining agreement and the related manager and employee training. There's a ton of work underway now to put all of those changes into the system. Refresh and recommit was leadership training that all leaders went through during, I think it was like a 6 or 10 week period. The full formal mentor program has been launched. The Enterprise Project Governance Board, which is working to prioritize and manage budget and resource prioritization for large projects or projects that touch multiple divisions, has completed their first of their big room planning sessions and prioritized projects for 2025 budget. And finally, we've launched, as you're aware, a lot of operational reporting and key metrics, as well as the management system for the strategic plan.
Questions on this slide, Commissioner? Just a comment. We just heard from Jeff, and I realize now we launched software to help give away the $14.4 million. I really attest to how nimble our IT department is.
It's not here to hurt.
I mean, that's a pretty short.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And beyond that, the following slides, which I won't speak to unless you have questions, go through in more detail all of the amazing work that's going on for each one of the strategic objectives. So I guess I'll just ask if you had questions on any of those or any other questions.
Just in terms of timing of your report to us, mm-hmm. There was discussion, it was quarterly, and then the board had a discussion semi-annual.
Yep.
Okay.
So in the...
From big picture policymaker, is there enough movement, even at semi-annual, where we can see trends?
I think it's a good question, and I think it depends on the objective and the initiative and the speed that they're moving at. If the board would prefer a once annual update, we could do that in February.
I'm not advocating. I just kind of always think in those terms. If you have a little longer period, a year,
yeah.
I can see trends in terms of, because these things are multi-year initiatives. So, but I'm not recommending that to the commission.
My opinion is we may get to a place where once a year is makes sense, but we just had this conversation about Sadie. Until we all get comfortable with what we're actually measuring and how we're working towards, I think this is, to me, I think this is the right balance for now. But I think we can go to it at the time.
I mean, you and your teams work on this a lot, but we don't. So it's good to be refamiliarized with it.
Yeah, I think from a rhythm of business perspective, we would want to provide you a report quarterly, which we're doing, but it could be a written report in the intervening quarters once we get to a point where we're all comfortable with what the content of it is.
So what's our next report?
You will get a Q3 written report in the packet for, I think it's the first November meeting, but you won't get another presentation until February.
Also, we aren't doing it quarterly, because I had, my recollection is the board had suggested to John that it be every 6 months.
Yeah,
am I wrong?
No, that was correct, and that's why we've gone to semi-annual presentations.
Okay, all right.
You will get in your board packet the written quarterly report.
Okay.
For your reference.
Sorry to be so confusing.
And I will just, my bias is to continue to do the semi-annual. And one of it is even selfishly for us, And our team, we are still getting our legs under us as far as making this part of how we do business and just our kind of built into the DNA of how we operate, how we prioritize projects. And I think providing that to you continues to heighten that sense of focus and awareness for the entire organization. And I don't, we're not ready to kind of, we haven't, what I would call normalized this as just part of our daily operation. I mean, this was a huge effort, right? Standing up the strategic plan. Laura and team have just done an amazing job getting us to this point, but we're still starting, you know, getting the wheels really, really turning. And I think, again, it continues to heighten the importance for the entire organization when we know that we still have to come and present to you and talk through these and get great questions from you all. And it shows your awareness and your engagement in the process as well. So that's just my bias.
Me too.
Any questions or comments?
The history of, can you go back?
Yes.
To the last.
Which one? Okay.
The one before.
This one?
Okay, yeah. It wasn't very long ago that we stood up the governance board, the enterprise. Mm-hmm. I thought that was such a good move.
Yes.
I mean, to try to weave all of this together in a sensible way, mm-hmm. I like it a lot. I think it's fantastic.
It is a real opportunity to weigh the costs and benefits, the value, the risks, and the costs of various projects as we prioritize them and move them forward, mm-hmm. from both the funding and a resource standpoint.
Exactly.
And just to build on that, there are certain initiatives in here that are really things that we have not done as an organization or not done to the extent that we've now built in the strategic plan. The cost of service analysis and really the focus that we've had on that, and that's been some learnings, but that's a high priority, and you can see Laura highlighted that in here. That will come back to you when we start, you know, getting to the point in the budget process where we are recommending rate increases and or revenue adjustments, and how all that plays out and kind of builds the case for why we're doing what we're doing. The same way with standing up a risk.
Enterprise risk management.
Yeah, enterprise risk management process. Again, something that we hadn't done in the past, but it's really key to how we think about things strategically from a risk perspective going forward. So, you know, again, those are game changers for us, but those are also things that connect directly to you and your oversight and responsibility for the PUD.
And cost of service needs to be known to all of our customers. They need to understand that.
And I think one of the things that we're still working toward is how do enterprise risk management, the enterprise project governance board, the strategic plan, the action planning process for that, and then budget planning and financial forecasting for the next number of years. How do those really all come together? We're having a lot of the right conversations and moving it forward, but we still have a little bit of arts and crafts and how we're sharing data and moving things back and forth. And so there's a pretty significant effort still underway and to be completed to get to the full place of maturity for how all of these big new things interrelate.
Laura, have we thought about a customer-facing piece that would have a lot of it is here, but you know, the things the customers care about, outages, their experience with us, those kinds of things. Have we thought about, I don't know, the website or social media? Have we thought about some, I guess that's why the Sadie thing bothers me, because I mean, I understand what it is and what it represents, but you know, we had the big outage here recently. My power was off for 50 seconds, right? Because some automatic equipment reclosed and I was back on and many of my neighbors weren't. So those kind of things, I think, people would, you know, appreciate to understand. Have you thought about that, or
we have thought about it and not moved it forward yet? Sort of maturity thing. So right now, the process that happens is after we have this conversation, this report does get posted to the strategic priority section of snowpud.com, so customers and partners can access it. We haven't had detailed conversations yet about what an actual customer-facing dashboard or, you know, snapshot progress report could look like. It's on my personal wish list as we move into 2025 to have a conversation about how we do improve our ability and our kind of rhythm of communicating some of this more detailed information with customers. One of the things we're doing to sort of get us there from a maturity standpoint is the all employee version of the operating monthly metrics dashboard. I've been working with David in communications, and we're going to start doing a piece in District Daily sometime between now and the end of the month, where we're going to focus on one metric at a time, talk about why it's important to us, what it means, how it's moving, so that we can make sure that if we start sharing that information broadly to our customers and partners, that our employees are equipped to speak to it if somebody at a barbecue says, sure, I saw your SADI number.
Yeah.
So. Any other final questions?
No, thank you.
I see our plan expires in 2027.
It does.
Coming quick, when will we start on the next one?
2025, we'll start the conversations about whether or not we're continuing that plan, or if we need to revisit the contents of it and what that looks like. I'm anticipating that being sort of a second half of 2025 evaluation.
Great work.
Excellent. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Fantastic job. All right, next up is Garrison Mark to talk about contingency services as they relate to our MBA product. Oh, I'm sorry. It is Ryan Kyle that is going to speak to this. Good morning, Ryan.
Morning, John. Morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Ryan Kyle, senior manager of Power Scheduling. And Garrison and I flipped a coin and I won. So I'm up here.
You won?
I won. I look at it positively, right? So good morning, commissioners. So I'm here to talk today about contingency services for Power Scheduling. So a brief overview here. This is intended to be just an informational briefing. It's a pretty short, small slide deck here, just to give you an overview. Do plan to come back in September meeting with contracts we'll discuss here for your approval. But today we're just gonna go over kind of an overview of, you know, why we're here, what we're planning, why we're doing it, how did we get here, what's the approach, what have we been doing to contract these contingency services, and then what's the next steps? So what to expect. And again, this is just informational, no decision needed today. Please stop me for questions as we go along here. So contingency services overview. So the PUD is seeking to have a backup services for power scheduling. This is the event that our staff is stretched too thin. And really where this comes from is mostly due to our decision recently to switch power products next year. As you know, the product that we have now in the block slice is managed by the power scheduling team on a 24/7 basis. With the switch next year, it's anticipated there'll be some impacts to that team, potentially to the entire team. So what we're really trying to do is make sure that these services that we provide right now in power scheduling can continue all the way through the end of our current contract. In order to do that, we want to make sure we have a backstop to the people and that provide those services. We hope and anticipate that everybody currently here at the district will stay and continue those services, but in the interest of protecting everything that we do for the ratepayers in the district, we need to be prudent to have a backup here. So for this, we've been working, we identified TEA, the Energy Authority, as a company to provide these services. They're really a company that does the same sort of work. They have many other PUD type clients, and they are public power. They're also about the only Dane town that can do this sort of thing. So we've contracted and we're working with them on these services. We really only anticipate to use these type of services in the event that staffing becomes too low and we can't sustain at our current levels. We have a relatively small team with 10 people operating two different desks, 24/7, 365. So it doesn't take very many people that may choose to leave the district to have a significant impact on these services. And with the change in power product coming up next year, it would also be very challenging to find backstops within the district that would be available. This is a very highly specialized skill job. It takes many months to get somebody up, ready, and trained to go. And so that's why we've looked outside the district for these sort of backup services. We haven't established a specific number of people, but like I said, it's a small role. It's a small group with, you know, when you have five, losing one is 20% of that group. We have had staff from around the PUD collaborating to develop the approach to this contingency services. So we've had feedback and collaboration from groups, power supply, finance, risk, contracts purchasing, IT, and as well as power scheduling. We've had power traders and hydro schedulers that have been involved providing input and feedback on the things that are essential and important that we make sure we have backups to here. And they've been offering specific input and help along the way here. So the approach we've taken is to try to impact the least amount of PUD employees for the least amount of time. We really looked at this as we want everybody here. We want everybody here doing their, you know, what they're doing for as long as possible. So we've been able to divide up the support, or the contingency services into kind of a modular approach. In power scheduling, we have kind of three distinct areas. We have our day ahead and long term trading and scheduling. We have our real time operations, which are divided amongst real time power and real time hydro scheduling. So three kind of distinct groups. And we've been able, through this contract process that we've been going through, to identify those and separate them out into you know, a kind of a modular approach, so that if we lose some people in one area, it's not going to affect everybody in all areas. It will only affect the people in that specific group, which I think is really important in the interest of keeping everybody here as long as possible. So part of this contingency services is a technology integration. As you can imagine, you know, trying to get data flow between one company and another company so that they can replicate what we're doing if needed is a pretty big lift. So that's a long lead item that we've been working on already with staff from the district and staff from TEA to ensure that the data setup, all the IT kind of behind the scenes type stuff, is ready and, you know, built out, ready to go if needed.
The data setup includes controls.
It includes control. Yes, and so most of this data, if not all this data, is from third-party outside vendors. So people from like BEPA or other providers that have our scheduling and software services. NCG is the company that provides that. So the data flow is from these outside companies to TEA. Nothing as of right now is coming from the district directly or touching district IT resources. And so obviously, you know, with the sending of this data, TEAs also has to work on figuring out how they collect that data and position it so they can have a position that looks similar to ours. So there's work going on their side as well that's somewhat invisible to us. We don't know how they're setting it up per se, but we know that they have to do that work. And so we've kind of started on this is the data we plan to send and how it's going to integrate.
We don't know because it's proprietary?
We don't know because they use different systems than us. We've identified the data we need to send to them and how it should be displayed. We don't have any control over the specific screen that they would use. Right.
So they wouldn't be scheduling Jackson then, is that correct?
So we're still working through the particulars of each type of thing, whether it's Jackson, other small resources, or slice contract. This, there would be, like I said, we're working on a modular approach here. Okay. So Jackson's typically handled in the day ahead time frame from a planning perspective of what schedule to run to. They wouldn't be controlling the plant. That would still be at the plant itself.
When you said all outside data, I was thinking maybe they would.
They would be getting a schedule of what Jackson's planning to run for the next day.
Thank you.
And like I said before, it's been a cross-functional team contributing to this review of services, which we believe is leading to a better result overall. Which is really important to understand from this as a backup perspective. We want to make sure everybody understands how it will look, how it will work, because it will touch many things if needed to be called upon. Again, we're hoping that this is something that we don't need to call upon, but, you know, like insurance, it's good to have.
Tell me right in front if this is going too far into detail, but as I, we've gone through this process, talk about Jackson, but we still have wind in our portfolio where they are, it's contracted.
Okay.
So how, that's point to point, so how does that work?
So the way we're planning this is so that if needed, everything would work similar as it does today. So the wind would still come to our load, it would still flow on the transmission that it does today. It doesn't really change anything about what we do today, it would change who does it, if needed. So this is really broken down into, it says three service contracts and four total contracts. We've been working on these throughout the last few months. So over all of these, what we've been calling task orders is a resource management agreement. And this is really meant to be the umbrella agreement for all these subsequent service contracts. So this has been taking the bulk of our time, but it's really been set up in, and you'll see as we, when we deliver the packet that it's in a really good place to help protect the district from a risk perspective. The other three are more along the lines of operational type of contracts. So the technology integration that I spoke to before is really saying what data we're going to send back and forth, who's going to receive it, when they're going to receive it, the really nuts and bolts of that. And that data is all meant to, like I said, replicate the positions that we see in power scheduling on their screen so that they have the same view that we have so they can manage the same way that we manage. The Slice software contract, that's a software as a service for an optimizer engine that would be the backup for our hydro scheduling team. So right now we have a team of six people that manage our BPA Slice contract to manage the hydro output from the federal system dams. And this would be a software that would do a similar thing if we lost too many hydro schedulers. And then the third contract you see here is contingency services. This is meant to really replicate our day ahead trading and scheduling and our real time power trading and marketing. Like I said, this is modular so that it will touch each group individually if we need it. And it does come with a reservation fee to ensure that TEA is available and ready if needed to be called on. So we anticipate that we're still working through the details of that, but there will be a fee monthly to make sure that they are ready to take over these services. We were able to negotiate out fees on other things and lower them in other places to not have them. There is, as contracts go, a give and take sort of there in the relationship. But that is still ongoing, and you'll see more of that when we come back. So, like I said, the next steps here are to bring back a packet of contracts for you for approval next month in September. And the expectation is that these contracts would start in October of this year and run through October of next year when we are planning to switch products with Bonneville. And we anticipate that we and hope that we won't ever have to call or use these products. Like we said, we have a great team.
That's a question I have.
Yeah, we have a great team that's here doing the job and been doing it well for a long time. We really want them to stay here doing that through the end of this current contract. But we also recognize that people have to make decisions that are the best for them and their families that don't always align with where the district might be. So in an effort to protect the district, protect the ratepayers, that's why we have this contingency contract that we're putting in place here. And like I said before, I kind of liken it to insurance. I hope that we never have to use it, but I think it's prudent that we have it in the event that something were to happen and we lost too many staff members. So that's all there is today, but I'm open for any questions.
Questions, commissioners?
It's good thinking, it's good planning.
Thank you for, I think I understand contingency. So these services are only needed through transition?
Correct.
So longer term, there's no need.
Longer term, it's not anticipated.
To have them on contingency.
That's correct. It's really meant to get us from our current contract that we're in now to our next contract with Bonneville.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Excellent job.
Take a break.
Sure.
Let's take a short break and come back at 10. All right, 10 o'clock, and we are back.
All right, next up is our Snow Smart overview, and Kevin Lavery. Over to you, Kevin.
Morning, John.
When are we going to snow run out of background?
Glad you brought that up. Well, good morning, commissioners. My name is Kevin Labering. I'm the program director on the Snow Smart program. The team was last presentation to the commission was in March of 2023. And so, Commissioner Logan, you brought up the acronym. So we have a new logo. So CorpComp helped create this for us, as you see at the top, when we put it. The acronym description up there, Snohomish County PUD Secure, Modern, Automated, and Reliable Technology Project.
Kevin.
So it's easier just to say Snow Smart. So that's going forward, just use that.
It's a good acronym.
It's a great acronym. Thank you. All right, so we're excited to be here. Let's see. It says. Okay, so for today's presentation, the purpose is to just bring you up to speed on what the program is about, updates on some of the work that we've been doing. And really the expectation of the board is to be informed of our next steps. We'll have some contracts coming up in the future, along with a program resolution similar to what we did on Connect Up to formally approve that. And I'll be talking a little bit more about that resolution in a few minutes. All right, so our agenda for today is we'll go over a little bit of background on the grant itself that we're receiving to help support this program. We'll also be talking about how we're breaking down program goals, the scope, what kind of work are we doing, who's involved with it. So we'll share who's on the program team, and then how we've broken up the program, and similar to Connect Up again, into multiple projects. We'll be talking about those three projects right there. We'll then go into the program schedule and budget, and then talk about the program resolution along with next steps. All right, so regarding the grant, so we were awarded a $30 million grant last fall from the Department of Energy. And this grant is part of what's called the Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnership Program, or GRIP. So we're calling this the GRIP grant.
GRIP.
GRIP, right. So this was created under bipartisan infrastructure law in 2022, and it's being administered by Department of Energy's Grid Deployment Office. So we're an awardee under GRIP Round 1, and GRIP Round 2, I think, is taking place, well into it right now. And fortunately, we had some good experience on the team. Susie Oversvee, John Heave, were able to help out other utilities as they were applying for these grants and give them some pointers that helped us out during our experience. So I know others were involved with that too.
Do we have any plans for applying for anything under round two? Are we eligible?
We are not applying for round two. There are other rounds in the future, which we potentially could be a candidate for. Right now, the plan is just focusing on round one. Now, Kim, was there anything else?
Just round one, right?
Just round one right now. So
one is plenty.
One is plenty for now. Yes, thanks. And then the DOE contract. So as we see, we were awarded last fall a $30 million contract. DOE is creating a contract for that. And so terms and conditions and such are being created. We've received some draft copies of it, but we expect any day for that contract to be issued. And then we will we'll have our legal department take one more look at it, and then we'll be back with resolution will be in your packet for approval once we've received that contract from DOE. So we expect that resolution to be hopefully then sometime it's one of the two commission meetings in September. So we'll give you a heads up on that. All right, so program goals. So really high-level items, objectives that we're trying to accomplish with this. So one is around grid resiliency, so enhancing our grid system and improving reliability, so decreasing our restoration time from hours to minutes. Also, wildfire mitigation risk, including smoke exposure to communities throughout the region, and then reducing our energy burden through improved grid efficiencies. And so really, this is a lot of this is work that we're already planning on doing over the next 20 years, and this will compress it down to a five-year period of time, so accelerating that.
No, I'm just on cloud nine.
Good. Love that. All right, so those were the goals. So get down to the work. How are we going to accomplish this? So Snow Smart program is focusing on installing hundreds of wireless connected smart grid devices, along with replacing our SCADA system, ADMS system, to be able to control those devices, have them more in a configured automated mode to respond more quickly and remotely control these devices also. So some of these benefits that we'll see from this is around fault location isolation and service restoration and FLISR. So being able to isolate those outages into smaller areas and hopefully in shorter durations of time, being able to more readily pinpoint the fault locations. VoltVAR, so voltage and VAR optimization. So this will enable us to be able to adjust voltage that's delivered to our customers, and particularly during peak demand times, costly energy times, or during times of energy efficiency programs that we're trying to implement. Decreasing the amount of energy is basically delivered, still usable by our customers, but lowering the cost for us, particularly when it's at a high price for energy.
So does that mean lowering the voltage or increasing the voltage to?
It's lowering the voltage, still usable by the customers though.
Right.
Wildfire and extreme weather risk mitigations, we'll have devices out there that will be automated. Right now, we with our reclosers in our high-risk areas, we go out and manually do a setting to them. And so now we'll be able to program more automated settings. And also be able to monitor the weather, moisture content of areas, such as that. That will be able to help us more pinpoint the times that we need to have those services activated. And then engaging our community, so leveraging existing partnerships with our tribes, regulatory agencies, labor, local governments, just to line ourselves up with some of their efficiency programs and some of their efficiency programs that they have planned.
I have a question. If I
may. Yes.
Sometimes we use drones to inspect lines and all kinds of things that we're concerned about. Do the drones communicate in the SnowSmart system?
We don't have that capability planned out. There could be a module, it's just not an area of focus. Oh, John Heap's supporting lots of presentations this morning. Do you know anything more about that?
Nothing about drones.
Okay, nothing about drones.
Okay.
Thank you, good question. All right, so our program team. So we have a much larger team than this, many departments that are supporting this program, and we're really excited for their support. Just kind of looking at a smaller group here, part of the program team itself. We have a couple of areas, one around the program office. So we have our grant coordinator, Leslie Moss, great experience helping us out with our DOE grant. We have legal, Joanne Jones, communications lead, Kelly Stickney, our DOE business point of contact, Kim Johnston, and program admin, Mary Wickland. And then we, as I mentioned, we divided this up into multiple projects. And so we have the ADMS project manager, Sheila Crawford, along supporting project managers. That's quite a big project. It's almost its own program in a way. With Travis Olson, Laura Wilson helping out with additional project management work there. John Heap, who's here today, our project manager over distribution automation project. And our community benefits project is being managed by Susie Oversee. And then a related project, our corporate historian, is being managed by Brad Acey. We're also taking a similar, sorry, any questions?
Corporate historian, can you tell us what that role is?
Yeah, so there's a SCADA historian, which is more data that we have to keep protected. And so we can only, we keep it within this SCADA system. So it's data that's collected, historical data that's collected by SCADA. But there's also other data that's not, that's used by other groups. And this is the other part of it. So this corporate historian makes that data available to other groups also while keeping the other specific data protected. All right, and then owner's engineer. So as you remember in Connect Up, we had Z2 Solutions helping us out, kind of coaching us and giving us some guidance along the way. Also helping to represent us in a way with the vendors that we're working with, making sure that contracts are being set up right, scope is being delivered properly. So we have a similar group called GridBright. So we had that contract was extended a few months ago, the one that was approved by the commission a few months ago. So we're excited to have them on board, and we've utilized them for a number of tasks, and they've been doing a great job. So really happy with them. All right, so breaking this down into multiple projects. So we have our community benefits project. Susie Oversee is managing this project, and this is really focusing around our communications with various groups and showing really our credibility as a utility that we're supporting their environmental goals that they have, or efficiency goals that they have, resilience goals. And so we'll be one of the groups will be the Tulalip tribes, and we're working with them to let them know about the benefits that we have of the program and the focus that we'll have in their area. Also supporting a safe and healthy community. So we mentioned wildfire mitigation earlier. And so we'll work with regional groups, government, who are planning initiatives around this. And so this program will be supporting the reduction of smoke exposure, particularly in disadvantaged communities we'll be focusing on. And then creating quality jobs. So we'll be working with IBEW Union to expand efforts within our workforce to ensure that we have a workforce that represents our community. And also we're supporting the district's goals around everybody feeling welcomed and valued in the roles that they have. Another project that we have, our distribution automation infrastructure project. John Heap's managing this one. And so this is looking to how can we optimize all of these devices that we're purchasing within the program, maximize benefits throughout the district. And so John and team will be overseeing the design and engineering of the location of these smart grid devices that will be installed. And as we note here, there's a number of devices that we have here. So we have the three-phase recloser, which is really around helping us out with our reliability efforts. Around wildfire, we have these single-phase reclosers that we'll be installing in the north and east sections of our district. And then the recloser control banks and capacitor banks, these relate to our voltage optimization or VVO efforts. A little bit of coverage in all of those areas. And of course, you know, we have these devices. There's going to be an integration with the systems that will control these devices remotely. And that's around the other project, our advanced distribution management system. So Sheila Crawford managing this project. And so this will be replacing our SCADA system, ADMS system. And these are familiar terms that we'll be replacing, but quite a huge complex project.
Enterprise-wide system.
Yes. So we're excited to have Sheila there with her experience and other supporting project managers too. And so this will be installing or replacing our SCADA system, our outage management system, distribution management system, and energy management system and mobility. So we're excited about that. Well, actually, while these are being installed, we'll have our old system up and running in parallel, and then we'll finally migrate fully over to our new system. That'll take a number of years, and we'll go through the calendar in just a minute. Also, noted earlier, the Flizzer, Volt Bar, those benefits, those are things that people can configure with this system remotely. All right, so our program schedule, so we've really broken into, it's really into the three project areas. We see our distribution automation project in that first swim lane that's right there. And so we'll be starting up our design around that deployment. We're hoping first half of 2025 that we'll start deploying these systems and testing and commissioning. Really, the installations, testing, commissioning will be throughout the duration of the program. We have, I think it's just under 1,000 devices to install, so quite a workload right there. The ADMS project is the second and third swim lane that you see there. Really, same project, but two different phases. The first portion of the project will be focusing on installing the SCADA and ADMS platform, with the second phase of the project starting up in 2027 through 2028, and that's more around our advanced applications that we'll be using for enhanced capabilities. And then our third project, as you see there, that last swim lane is our community benefits. And so all those aspects that we mentioned earlier about engaging our community, being involved with the community plans around efficiency and environment, and focusing on job recruitment around diversity, equity, and inclusion.
And the last one.
Justice for Initiative. Yes. So amplifying project benefits and with federally designated tribal and disadvantaged communities. So one aspect of that that we're looking at is, for example, is around wildfire mitigation. Not everybody can afford air conditioning. And so we have, you can't afford air conditioning and it's hot and you got a smoke event, still open up your windows because you're too hot. And so this program is to help mitigate that, to help lower the likelihood of smoke exposure throughout the district. But in a way, I mean, it's benefiting the whole district, but in a way, it's helping out disadvantaged communities that would otherwise need to do that. Okay, any other questions
so far, Commissioner? $30 million, is that going through the whole period of the chart?
Yes.
Okay, so the reporting requirements must be pretty significant. Who does that?
Yeah, so we have Leslie Moss on our team. We actually went through a checklist yesterday of all the different reporting requirements. Quarterly, yearly reports that we're all familiar with. And so we went through a checklist of all of the different reports that required. I'm glad Leslie Moss is on our team because her name's after quite a few of those. But we have to, which means that we need to set up our budget, for example, to be able to measure things really well. Earn value, how much work did we get done compared to how much we spent. So yeah, very, very complex. We have the right team to do this, though.
Who did the grant application? Was that our team effort also?
Yes, that was a team effort. Kim Johnston, John Heeb, Susie Oversby, and others. It was prior to me being on the program, or what other names I should bring up?
It's a very big list.
It's a big list.
No, it was a big success.
Yes.
We did that.
We should rent out our grant services. We have a high success rate. Millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, they did a great job, and this is wonderful benefits coming from it.
So can I? Oh,
go ahead.
Can I, Commissioner Wolf, ask the question about using money?
Mm-hmm.
And is that through 2029 that we have that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Wolf. That leads us to our next slide here around the budget. So everybody's favorite. All right. So program budget from 2024 through 2029 is $70.2 million. And then we would be receiving a $30 million DOE reimbursement from that. And so a net cost of $40.2 million to us. Again, this is work that we were already planning on. It's accelerating it down to 5 years. And one of the great things is it helps us protect us from future inflation. You know, if you look down the road, we've had a lot of inflation with equipment. And so being able to buy it within this first 5 year period of time helps to mitigate potential inflation through, you know, years 5 through 20.
I have a question about the acceleration.
Yes.
So we're still paying 60% of the cost of the product.
Right.
How do we, are we, is it, do we have increased CapEx for these 5 years? How is this money taking us from 5 to 20? It must be accelerating some spending that we're going to do over 20 years, or how does that work?
Did you nod your head?
Okay. Yes. I mean, yeah, we have increased spending over these 5 years specific to this project. But then there's also a return on that investment that Kevin will get into.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, correct. So as we spend, so DOE will match us. So once a quarter, we'll have a report that we'll send back for reimbursement. And so the money that was spent during that quarter that you know, we have to say what tasks it was aligning to. We have very high level tasks that we have to associate with all part of our plan. And so they'll reimburse us for 50% of those costs. So that will go into 2029 to a certain point. And then when we have the remaining $10.2 million, we'll still be reporting that to DOE as work being completed, but we're not asking for reimbursement on that final part. So it'd just be on the first $1 million, or $30 million that we would be asking for reimbursements on.
Are those reimbursements like come in the next century?
In the next
century? I'm sorry, dealing with DOE.
Right.
Anyway.
To be determined, so yeah. We'll see how well
Have we received any grant money from the IIJA, the Jobs Act, federal? I think it's called the IIJA.
I'm not familiar with that. Is there anybody here that was disfamiliar?
Here's our expert.
All right.
The GRIP, this is Kim Johnston, Director of Government Relations. The GRIP program is part of that bipartisan infrastructure law,
okay.
Also known as the IIJA.
Okay.
So this is funding within that. And one of the advantages to being right out of the gate with this funding is once we have a signed contract that does provide protections, should we see changes in administrations going forward, being out early greatly benefits us. So kudos
yes.
to the team that worked really hard on that first round that was a little less defined. Shorter timeline that protects us. Dollars going forward.
Thanks for explaining.
Can while you're up there, I've got a question that's been brewing in my head, and maybe this is in your wheelhouse. But you know, I'm looking at what we're doing and how it's going to help mitigate wildfires, which makes a lot of sense. And it seems like we're sort of setting a new standard of care for wildfires. And I'm wondering, there's, you know, there's been some huge court cases recently against utilities for fires. And I'm wondering if there's anything in government legislature looking at if you meet a standard of care, indemnification, or are those conversations happening? Because even we do all these things to mitigate, doesn't mean we can 100% prevent that our system will cause a fire.
It's a really great question. The answer is yes. At all levels of government, this is a theme that we're seeing. There's a lot of conversation happening, and I think you will be hearing more from me and my team as we monitor things, as we engage across all levels of government, how we should be positioning and posturing ourselves in those policy discussions.
Well, at in Northwest Public Power Association and the APPA, we've passed resolutions to set limits on how much we can be sued for.
Correct. Those are, again, with trade associations and resolutions, those are essentially policy statements that drive the way that they will engage with elected officials and policymakers. So those organizations are on record. We have been engaged with APPA and NWPPA and our delegation to talk loosely about the challenges, you know, as we're seeing more and more wildfire activity in different places as well. So we are engaged. It's, these are complex issues, and we're just as a team internally starting to get our minds around how we might want to discuss and where the best places to discuss.
Thank you.
I have another
And I'm not sure this is related, but I was reading in some of the information that's reading material that's been provided that the president signed, I think, some kind of legislation that was targeted at identifying potential fire, and it was something that beamed off of satellites.
That was in our last report. There was some interagency agreement on how they can work better together to leverage technologies that already exist for the purpose of identifying wildfires earlier, which benefits everyone.
Right, okay.
Thank you, Kim. All right, so just back on the budget, so for 2025, we have in the district's budget $15 million that will be paying for that portion of the program, and then the rest being spent throughout the duration of it. We are investigating potentially using bonds, but right now that has not been decided yet. Also around key benefits, just one more, just around that VVO, volt bar optimization, there is energy savings that we have that, again, particularly during peak cost times. And so that right now with the new BPA product switch, there's some new calculations we can make based on that. We don't have the numbers yet, it still needs to be analyzed, but there will be some cost savings because of that too.
So can you put that potential as sort of like a certain percent we could reduce load by one or two or three, or what's the magnitude of the potential for?
Are you talking about
the VOA opposite
the cost savings, or are you talking about
the energy savings?
Energy savings, yeah. I would be guessing right now. I know under the old model we had a number. John, do you have any guesses on that?
Yeah.
I'll come on. Let me introduce John Heave.
Hi, John Heave, Principal Engineer, Distribution Automation Project Manager. The calculations that we have around volt bar optimization is really focused on changing our voltage approximately 1% across our grid, which would still keep us within our required voltage range that we need to serve our customers. And our most recent calculation of what that is about 0.7 change to our power. So if you're thinking about a peak time, if we're at 1,000 megawatts, 0.7%, you're talking about the, would that be, that'd be 7 or 70?
70.
Someone can do the math on the fly, not in pressure.
70.
So that's 70 megawatts at that 1,000 megawatt time. So it does end up being a pretty significant change. There is potential that we can go to larger than 1% and still kind of maintain our required voltage range. And as we get more AMI data from the connect-up system, we're going to be able to control those a little bit more tightly than we do today.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any other questions around program budget? Okay, so mentioned earlier about the program resolution. So there's really two parts to this. One is to gain the commission's approval to enter an agreement with DOE with that pending contract that we're waiting for right now. Then the other part related to it would be moving forward with the Snow Smart program and to implement the scope of the program and of the grant. So this will be in the commission packet sometime in September. Right, I wish I could pinpoint a date at this time, but we're thinking the 3rd or 17th in your packet for approval. And again, we'll give you a heads up that this is included with that.
So is it approval of entering into the grant?
Entering the grant agreement, the contract itself.
That's what the board will be approving.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so we've been awarded the grant, but the formal signing of the grant will need the commission's approval for that.
Can you get a big check, a big $30 million check?
We could. We'll work on that. We'll look into it. All right, so next steps, as I mentioned, DOE issuing the contract, and then that program resolution will be in your packet sometime in September. We also have some big deliverables for DOE. So once they issue the contract to us, we have 30 days to put together a pretty complex program management plan, which the team is already working on right now, and our community benefits plan, which is already substantially completed. So we'll be ready for that timing. Also, once we get approval to move forward, we'll have, even though project teams have been meeting, working on some things, we'll have formal kickoffs for each of our projects. And then we can move forward with purchases to around the DA equipment and the SCADA ADMS vendor contracts, which are being planned for right now. We'll be coming back for approval from the commission. And then we'll start up our quarterly updates January 2025. And then within this program, we're seeing this program as an opportunity to train people and to give people experiences within our employees. And so I'll be bringing back one of our project leaders into these quarterly updates and have them participate with me on those.
We must go to the last page. Look at how clean that is.
I know, it's very clean.
Pride in what you do and who you use.
It's AI generated.
It is Wendy Paris generated. So,
you gotta be kidding me. No.
It's nice having that clean. Yeah. Wendy Paris from Corcom helped us out with this presentation too, so really appreciate her.
So that's not a real rate?
It is.
That is real. That is.
Well, that's
I just said she generated.
That's the point I was making.
Oh, yeah.
I'm always so proud that our rigs, for the most part, that are in the community, are almost spotless.
Yes.
I don't know how they have to do it, but that brings a lot of pride to me.
Yeah, it's wonderful. All right, so that brings us to any remaining questions from the commission.
Questions or comments, commissioners?
No, you may be needing to explain your icon with the logo.
Thank you, Commissioner Wolf. I forgot.
Not to me, but to
I was going to bring that up at the beginning. I even had it highlighted in my notes, and then I went on. So we have the utility. So it's really those three areas there. We have the utility pole with our smart grid devices and SCADA controls and ADMS control. We have the clock there, so reduced outage times. And then the last part of that is the wildfire mitigation.
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing that up.
It's really cute, but I bet a lot of people wouldn't understand it. I mean, in the public.
Yeah, that's, so maybe we'll do a little explanation on
that. We'll just put it in Facebook or something.
There you go.
Commissioner Olson, do you have any questions?
No.
You know, just to say that, as Commissioner Olson has said many times, grants are a lot of work to submit, to package together, a lot of work to get reimbursed, and jump through all the hoops and requirements. And so I appreciate all the extra work, and this one is huge, right? To be able to accelerate what we're going to do in 20 years to 5 years. So very impressive.
Excellent, thank you. Yeah, we have a great team to be able to accomplish this. Great planning taking place right now. Mm-hmm. We have the skills for it. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Great job.
Anything else this morning, John?
I can do it.
Okay. It is now 10:35, and our meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will be here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m.